Kodo is the is one of the teachers in Zen Community Oregon. I'm a sister of mine. She has been received transmission. And she's also the manager of Heart of Wisdom Zen Temple. So has a lot of experience with everything in life. And was a social worker for many, many years in the vocational rehab field. Has much wisdom in how to approach all kinds of difficult situations and with equanimity and wisdom. So thanks so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's see here. I'll try to see everyone. It's kind of, once again, an interesting way to talk to everyone. So I'll try, yell at me if I don't look at you once in a while. Okay, so I'll start. I take refuge in Buddha. I take refuge in Dharma. And I take refuge in Sangha. Good evening. Thank you for coming tonight and inviting me. Mushin invited me maybe a month ago. And she asked me what I would like to talk about. And I thought about it a little bit. And it's always kind of exciting if you talk about something that is really up for you right at the moment. And so I was thinking about, I had just done a weekend with two people up at Great Vow called Oceans of Compassion. And it's really a workshop, and we've gone to Beverly Beach, and it's during the Solve Beach Pickup time. So when I was up there, we had all the residents, young people, 20-year-olds, went to the beach for the day. And the first evening, we talked a lot about the climate strike and exactly what all was going on with that. And it was really, you know, moving, and it's really intense time right now. And we went to the beach, and we did a little service, helping clean up the beaches. It's very simple, but it's important. And one of the interesting things that happened there is when we went, there wasn't a lot. We went to the Peter Iredale, and there wasn't a lot of trash. And the volunteer that talked with us said, that's a really good thing because people have changed their ways of acting, and there's not so much trash. Of course, we've been in different places on the beach where plastic has come in during on the currents that come from a lot of different places. So even though we may pick up after a bonfire all this other plastic from the whole world and from a lot from the United States is becoming more evident on our ocean beaches. So that was one element. And then an element where we allowed people to just have some time in nature at the beach to do whatever they wanted. And a lot of joy came up during that time. And so I thought, well, this is an interesting thing of how to hold these things all together, hold both things at once, hold the awe and wonder of the natural world along with the discouraging climate and environmental impacts that are happening right now. How can we do that, and why would we want to do it? So that's where this talk kind of came from, and I've been working on it at some level for quite a while, because I've been very interested in the environmental movement for most of my life, and then late in the last 3 or 4 years up at Heart of Wisdom, we had a climate change discussion group, so we got a little bit more involved with that. That group kind of fell apart for a while. It's been dormant, I'd say. It's on hiatus. But now with the climate strike, I went to the Friday night, Friday morning, march in Portland, and it was very impressive to see all these young people marching. It gave me a lot of hope. A little sadness, too, because it's as if our house is on fire and the adults are not paying any attention. The house is on fire, and the kids are saying, do something, do something. You know, and that's very disturbing. It's very disturbing. So, while we're in the middle of this environmental crisis, sometimes people are just depressed, in despair, and avoiding looking at the situation. We all might fall into that category at some point. Frozen, unable to act, or burned out and unable to act. So as I said, I wanted to explore this idea, so I'm going to ask for some of your feedback too after tonight, just to find out where you're at with this idea, holding two things at the same time. So these two things could be any kind of two feelings, two emotions, two thoughts, perceptions that are conflicting in a way. So I just looked up the word opposites, and there's so many words that we have in our language for this that makes me wonder, you know, how, just about this, how competitive this world is, how opposite we are, how there's contrasting, how incompatible, how inconceivable, irreconcilable, antithetical, contradictory, clashing, contrary, at variance, at odds, differing, different, divergent, dissimilar, unlike, disagreeing, opposed, opposing, poles apart, polar. Either, how can we toggle together two things or closely align two things that are kind of polar opposites? Why would we want to do that? So being able to hold many views at the same time is part of our practice, part of our Zen practice. And it's a difficult one. And we may feel it's even a little too onerous to even practice at all. Especially in a world where competition is so important, or being right, polarized, the way our society is even more and more. So maybe we've opted out at looking at this, looking at our difficult states of mind or emotions or feelings. Maybe you have said, like I have a couple times, I'm not going to go down that path anymore because I don't want to feel that pain. And we've developed lifelong strategies, coping skills to avoid pain. And it may have worked for us in the past, but the unintended consequences of this, of removing ourselves from the present situation, are great. Mainly, we lose our confidence to be able to deal or to tolerate with uncomfortable situations, circumstances. And we may avoid situations where we could actually relieve pain or suffering. We all wall off parts of our ability to be compassionate. We may think, we may have these thoughts that feeling pain is for wusses, sissies, or it's too intense or too overwhelming. We may become stoic. And we looked up what is really a stoic. It said a person who endures pain or hardship without showing their feelings or complaining. That might be a good thing to do at certain times, but if that's your whole life, then it's a very narrow way of acting in the world. This can also lead to lack of empathy, more judgment, more criticism. Pain may be seen as the enemy of cheerfulness. Or we may look at pain as just plain wrong. And it's not just as an individual experience, but it's experience that's commonly held by a lot of people. We've kind of normalized this. It's become a societal norm. In the long run, it limits our ability to care. So what about holding joy and sorrow or sadness at the same time? Holding two things at once. So I started looking, where does this apply? And it came up a lot of different places. Maybe everybody has your own circumstances. There can be many, you can be both loved and hurt in a relationship. Your family could both love and hurt you, be a great source of both. You could be both well and have some ailment. So you hold both of those at the same time. You could live in a beautiful place and have a wonderful zendo, and at the same time acknowledge the signs of environmental stress and despair. And there's probably many more examples. So this is what I'm interested in as a way of healing and liberation. So in our Buddhist teachings, we can enter this through, there's a myriad of teachings which points in the same place, to liberation and healing. We can look at our experiences of avoiding and attachment, kind of our logical way of pushing away the things that we don't like and grabbing onto the things that we like, wanting to hold them. We know that that doesn't really work either. We can look at experiences through our that are shared and our interconnectedness of all things. Look deeply at that. We can look at what causes suffering and how to end suffering with the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path. We can look at the precepts as guides for our actions. There's endless ways to look at the teachings. We also to look at our teachings. But that's kind of study. Study is good. Experience is the other part that is really the most important part of our Zen practice. What does our experience say? How to let go of our fixed views? And how can we hold many views, let go of our own fixed ones? This is a little apart from our teacher Chosen Roshi. She wrote this and said, all spiritual work is aimed at developing our highest human potential. To live in a complex and often violent world with a mind that can be trusted to be clear and wise, and heart that is undefended and open to all beings. The key to unlocking this potential lies in being able to cease our habit of sorting and judging, picking and choosing, right and wrong, holding more. All great spiritual teachers have given us the same message, and it reminds us of our primary purpose in undertaking a life of spiritual or religious practice. We must open the gateway, not to just our full potential as human beings, but ultimately to freedom from the suffering what seems inherent in human life. Dogen Zenji, the great Zen master of the 13th century, advised, simply think of non-thinking. With this, Dogen invites us to fill the mind with something other than thinking, with, for example, a mantra or a simple question, a koan, or awareness. He also wrote that the mind of enlightenment is a mind that is aware of impermanence, of discontinuity, of ceaseless birth and death, this does not mean that the enlightened mind thinks about impermanence, but rather it has a continuous experience of the actual functioning in the moment of impermanence, of arising and disappearing. So that's part of what I'll eventually get to as part of the practice, is allowing this pain to arise and dissipate, the pain and the joy, both of them, to arise and dissipate. In the Pali Canon, the Buddha recounts that he sat under the Bodhi tree just on the brink of enlightenment, and he reached a stage where his mind was purified, bright, unblemished, light, and rid of imperfections. So you might say, oh, it sounds purifying. It sounds very puritanical, religious almost. What's that mean in the Buddhist context? So she writes, what is this imperfection of which he was rid? What is it that the Buddha rid himself of? It's simple. It is simply self-centered thought. When we examine discursive thought, all comparing and judging thoughts, we discover they are all self-centered. Even self-critical thoughts are self-centered. High esteem and low esteem are both forms of esteeming the self. If we experience for ourselves the truth that we earnestly long for, we must find a way to suspend for a time the thought function of the mind and activate the awareness function. How do we do that? So holding pain, or just what is the purpose of pain? So pain indicates something's wrong. Something has changed. We may be in danger. So what do we do? So if a part of our body is injured or sick, we take care of that part of us. So right here we are, a community of many things right in this body. And then we're a community of people right here. And there's a wider community, you all know this. And then there's a wider community, and we are part of the earth, which is a wider, the widest community that we know of, at least. So when there's something wrong with me, I know that, say, I cut myself, then I automatically do something to help it. We take the best possible medicine. We're concerned. We show caring and empathy. We have an innate inclination to help or be a benefit. But do we do the same for a larger community, or do we do the same for the earth? When we're emotionally or psychologically injured, we may ignore or resist, or disclaim, or disregard, stuff it away. Would we do that for a friend? That's the question. So part of our practice is to see what's happening with open eyes. Be courageous. Start where you are. Start where we all are. Become conscious. Reconnect to the inner world and the outer world. Of course, that's probably what brought most of you here, is to reconnect to something bigger than this small self. This is the work that Joanna Macy speaks about, reconnecting. It's a work of holding on, holding and letting go of both grief and pain and joy, not grasping on to joy and happiness, but just allowing them to be present. You may know the work of Joanna Macy. She's a Buddhist scholar and environmental activist who's worked on this problem for decades and decades now. She says, facing painful feelings can enliven people, but that flies in the face of common assumptions about how best to deal with distress. There's a strong current in mainstream culture that views depressing news, gloomy thoughts, and feelings of distress as negative experiences from which we need to protect ourselves. The notion that we should steer clear of anything too negative sets up avoidance as a default strategy. Yet the more we shy away from something we find difficult, the less confident we become we can deal with it. Avoidance easily becomes a habit. And when avoidance of emotional distress becomes a habit of a culture, this low level of confidence in our ability to cope creates a barrier to publicly acknowledge upsetting information. It seems that that's happening right now, and that at times the news doesn't even, for a long time, the news wouldn't even talk about an environmental crisis. Of course, we have a very limited view of what's going on in the big world picture, but we try our best. She goes on to say, Joanna Macy, this in turn leads to a selective screening out of aspects of reality that seem too painful to bear, too distressing to contemplate. The disturbing realities of the 21st century Earth, along with what we are likely to face over the coming decades, far exceed any previous experience of disasters in our history. It is not surprising the feelings provoked by this reality are difficult to bear. If I open the door to those feelings, said a friend in a recent conversation, I'll be plunged to a place so low I don't think I'll ever get back. What makes many of us nervous about looking at our grief or despair is the fear that we become stuck in those emotions. A key here is our capacity to deal with distress. Emotional distress can be motivating, but it does. But if it goes beyond what we imagine we can cope with, we may shut down. While on the outside we may appear to be holding it together, when we close off emotionally, we feel less alive, our energy sags, and our sensitivity dulls. We may feel we're just going through the motions. Alcohol, drugs, shopping, and antidepressants are among the devices we use. It's our consistent experience that this is from her point, from her experience in her workshops. It's our consistent experience that as people open to the flow of their emotional experience, including despair, sadness, guilt, fury, or fear, they feel a weight being lifted from them. In the journey into pain, something fundamentally shifts. A turning occurs. When we touch into our depths, we find that the pit is not bottomless. When people are able to tell the truth about what they know, see, and feel is happening into their world, a transformation occurs. There is an increased determination to act and a renewed appetite for life. A range of factors act together to bring about this shift. First, when we repress emotions and information, it dampens our energy. It's enlivening to go with rather than against the flow of our deep felt responses to the world. Second, we feel the tremendous relief on realizing our solidarity with others. I felt that very much at the climate strike last week. I saw thousands of people going in Portland. It opened my heart. Honoring our pain for the world is a way of valuing our awareness. First, that we have notice, and second, that we care. Intellectual awareness is not enough. We need to digest the bad news. This is what rouses us to respond. basic identity as we have a basic identity as part of the earth. We may be unique individuals, but we draw from and are interdependent on all others on the earth. Our Buddhist teachings point us in that direction. Each of us must take on the responsibilities and the experiences of this truth. So Joanna Macy has a framework, which she calls Active Hope, how to face the mess we're in without going crazy, which I can recommend, with a lot of different workshop activities. Her basic structure is to start with gratitude, then accept the pain. Next step is seeing with new eyes and then going forth and doing what is needed to be done. I have a few steps that I think might be helpful. You can try them out. So I've been practicing this. This is a kind of in between, a hybrid between a metta practice and a Tonglen practice. And I just call it opening the heart. And I'll have you do it right now. So just relax, and you can close your eyes or bring your attention to your heart area. Just so you really know where that is. Just imagine it. If you understand chakras, you might think of that, or it might just be the chest area. Just feel your heart. Or imagine feeling your heart. And then on the in-breath, allow your heart to open. Become larger. And on the out-breath, just let go. The in-breath, open your heart. However you imagine that, opening it wider. And notice if that's easy or hard, or if you feel you should be protecting your heart. You might feel that your heart is wrapped up. Whatever is your experience is fine. Let everything go. On this in-breath, open the heart. And then on the out-breath, keep the heart open. Breathe out, but allow your heart to stay open. And just breathe and keep your heart open for a few minutes here. Notice how that feels physically. What's the felt sense? And notice if you need to protect yourself. Just rest in that open heart. Let go of any story that's related to this, and just keep with the feeling of an open heart. An open heart to anything. Thank you, and come back to this with the group. So how I've worked with this, and you might want to try this, it's interesting to do on the cushion, but it's very interesting to do off the cushion. And especially when you're walking amongst people and seeing people that you don't know particularly. And just be aware of when your heart starts to contract. And say, oh, that person, I didn't want to walk by them because of my preconceived idea about who they were or what they were. And so this gives you physical evidence of how you're opening or shutting down around other people or circumstances. It's a practice that you can take every place with you. Of course, when you're on the cushion, when you're on the cushion, you may a lot of emotion may arise around whatever. I'm sure everyone has had that. If you've sat for very long, it may be anger, it may be frustration. So part of this practice is to just sit with that feeling and let go of the story. This will help you be able to keep your heart open more and more and become familiar with all those kind of difficult emotions. So if anger is one that comes to you often, as much as you can, just sit with that angry feeling and say, oh, anger, it's back, my friend. Make friends with these other shadow sides of you. We all have them. I know when I started actually working this many, many years ago, when I started, I felt that my heart was all bound up with like gauze. And so I would imagine that I would cut it off. So feel free to kind of use your imagination to open your heart more and more. And then one time I felt it was like, there was like armor on the heart. So it was a way to take off the armor. And as you're able to open your heart more and more, you're able to actually let go of a lot of all these self-centered views and to connect with people in a different way. In Portland, we have a lot of homeless folks, so it's like they're there on the sidewalk and I have this, my body just wants to kind of go across the street. And I would say, oh, let's open your heart and see what happens as you walk by. Time and time again, it's just been very nice interaction with people. It ruins all my fixed views of how people are. Now, the important part of doing this kind of practice, though, is to have self-compassion, because we will all often go off on your story. See, the story is not going to help you at this point. Come back to the felt feeling of opening the heart and what causes you to protect yourself. Look deeply at that. What is behind the fear that holds your protection? But if you criticize yourself all the time and say, oh, bad, you shouldn't be doing that, oh, look how terrible you are, any of that kind of thing is not productive at all. And so the practice of self-compassion and saying, oh, I have the same feelings as everyone else. Me and everyone else feels sad about the loss of our birds, the loss of our insects, my inability to have an open heart with certain people. Just realize that we're all working at the level that we can work. But at the same time, I'll end with this, work diligently. Because it's a very critical time. Of course, we all know it's a critical time in our history. And we must not abdicate our responsibilities to do no harm and to appreciate all beings and to be a benefit to the world in whichever way we're meant to be. So I think we can all hold joy and sorrow at the same time and go forth and be a benefit to the earth and to our, to all other creatures and all other beings. We all have the capacity to do it. We just need courage, willpower. Thank you.
So now maybe we'll open up the possibility of questions or comments on Claire's talk. Anything that you can share about your own experience with this this very difficult time and how you work with your own various reactivity, fear, and permission, inner permission to feel joy.
Yes, feeling joy and feeling pain are both part of the equation. So expressing what happened is part of it too. So.
I would say I notice about myself that I can judge others, and then I start to look at myself and all the ways that I could be better. So I have both things going on. You know, I see the judgment, and you could be better at, you know, protecting the environment, and then I see, well, I just drove in.
Right.
You know, I just am supporting. Right. So, I mean, I live in that dichotomy.
Right, and it's important. It's important for us to all look at how much we judge others. And so one of the practices that we can do is just when we're walking is notice, can we just walk and appreciate, be in awareness and not judge? And then every time we judge, just come back to awareness so that our default place is no longer judging but is awareness place. Yeah, that's a great practice to see that. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You know, I thought the climate strikes were really profound in the sense that it was a time in that people can really come outward about how they're feeling about this. You know, I'm not surprised. I look around and I see everybody, and I see certain, you know, a lot of people are aware of what's going on, but we just want to be quiet, you know, because it's so, I feel like it's so intense in all of us that if we just don't say anything, then it's like we can kind of have this facade that kind of everything's okay.
Yeah.
You know? Whereas it's just like kind of like right below the surface and we need to like break the glass.
Exactly.
And, you know.
Yes, Joanna Macy says we have to crack it open and let it come out and that not be afraid of it. Yeah, if we sit really quietly, we might think nothing's happening.
So when you went by the homeless person with an open heart, what actually happened?
Well, today it happened, yesterday it happened. You know, he was yelling or something. I went by, and he said, "Hi, have a nice day." Something like that, simple. Just like, I'm going, okay. And the other guy, you know, I had to walk between them, and they both were just really...
Wow.
It was a very nice little...
Because we're all pretty afraid of them. I'm afraid of them. I just want to get out of the way.
Kind of practicing that open heart. Of course, we don't want to be... We want to be careful because you don't want to be put yourself in danger. But a lot of times we are more afraid than is needed.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the shell. The shell of fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unquestioned and unlooked at.
Yeah.
I was going to also, what I've been working with myself with this is not only doing the internal work, which absolutely is our way. We do a lot of internal work in this group, right? But also looking at what action in the world can be undertaken. And I tie that to joy.
Mm-hmm.
Because not making a rule that it has to be a big action. It can be as small as going to the local soda shop and saying, "What are you doing with serving straws?"
Oh,
you know,
yes.
Or anything, any little aspect of
your own consumption habits that are really contributing. When we think about, you know, what any product that I buy, is it in plastic? Do I really want to do it? Do I really need it? So when you work with the action sort of side of life, there's a lot of source of joy when you can shed some of the automatic consumption habits. It's like, oh, I'm free. It's like when I gave up smoking cigarettes. It's like, I'm free.
Yes, it's
a great source of joy.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in the idea of overconsumption. Because we do it. But like, where is the line?
Yeah, Coda and I went out for dinner before.
We overconsumed.
And we drove up thinking, oh no, I have to sit with dinner in the belly, for instance. So it's one thing that the Buddha recommended was make sure that you eat very, very moderately if you were going to be practicing.
One thing that I really appreciated about the climate week, protests and so on, activities was... It had to do with that kind of breaking of silence, and I think it's related to a phenomenon, I forget the official term for it, but the social pressure, the social phenomenon where when you see smoke in a room, you know, they've done experiments, for example, where there's smoke in a room, and if a person's alone, they tend to take action immediately and go check it out. But if they're in a waiting room or with other people, they'll notice it and feel alarmed, and then they'll check, see how other people are reacting. And if they're all just ignoring it, they'll think, well, maybe that's normal. I don't want to be alarmist. I don't want to be, you know, socially outcast. And, okay, I'll just wait. You know, must be okay. And, I feel like this week, and especially with someone like Greta, how do you say her name?
Thornburg.
Anyway, just stating things so clearly, and, you know, amazingly immune or uncaring about, you know, how she's judged. We can talk about it now.
Yeah.
We can take action now.
Mm-hmm. I like what she said. I'm not going to give. I don't want you to have hope. I want you to be panicked or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do something.
Do something. Yeah.
So we can all vote.
That's true. We can all vote. Mm-hmm.
Not without doing something about making sure you can vote.
Yeah. Registering?
Well, registering, but making sure that the vote is counted, and knowing what the whole voting system consists of and how thoroughly it will be registered.
And where you get your information from that you vote based on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, running for office is always a possibility.
A different kind of life.
Maybe somebody here will consider running for office, and learning how that whole system works, and contributing some clarity to how public policy issues are framed.
That's true. I went to the Environmental Lobby Day this year, a couple of years in a row now, in Salem, and you know, there are representatives and senators are very accessible and have willing ears for most people. But I was really disturbed that many things weren't passed, and the system is very, well, I'll just say political, because it worked in a mysterious way. So if you can understand how it works, that would be wonderful. But just the, you know, the clean air energy bill did not get, didn't get through. And even simple bills like to restrain some pesticides didn't get passed. Few things did get passed. But not a huge amount. It wasn't a huge win for the environmental movement this year.
Well, very often those bills are tied to something that is not acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what you desire to have passed doesn't.
Yeah.
So it takes a lot of educating yourself.
Yeah.
On the bills.
And involvement.
Mm-hmm. And involvement.
One more comment before we move on to our closing chanting service. Thank you so much for being here and sharing this very important material with us.
I know you're all...